Welcome to the July 21st service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service today is led by guest minister, Reverend Monica Jacobson Tennyson, and her sermon is titled, To Grow a Soul. The podcast begins with an introduction of the speaker by Worship Associate Victoria Taylor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the New River Valley, where we share a mission to inspire, create, and transform. This is a place where everyone is welcome, and I'm so glad you found your way here on this steamy Sunday morning. My name is Victoria Taylor, and I am a lay leader worship associate, and I'm leading worship today with Monica Jacobson Tennyson, who is visiting us from the First Parish of Kingston, Massachusetts. She's been at our SUSE convocation in Cullowhee, North Carolina, and I know that, has anyone else come from SUSE? Did we have any SUSEers? They're probably exhausted. It's a week-long celebration of Unitarian Universalism in the southern portion of the United States. I will now share with you some words by Mark Epstein, only they're really the words of Achan Cha, the Thai meditation master. Mark Epstein relates this story. You see this goblet, Achan Cha said. For me, this glass is already broken. I enjoy it. I drink out of it. It holds my water admirably and sometimes even reflects the sun in its beautiful patterns. If I should tap it, it has a lovely ring. But when I put the glass on the shelf and the wind knocks it over, or my elbow brushes it off the table and it falls to the ground and chatters, I say, of course. And I understand that the glass is already broken every moment with its preciousness.
I gave Victoria the serious reading, and I kept a funny one for myself. If you are familiar with McSweeney's, you know that it is a humor magazine published on the internet. There's a lot of parody and a lot of over-the-top sort of pieces in McSweeney's. And this is a piece from 2 years ago, from July of 2017. It's written as though it were a letter from Blue Apron. Now, Blue Apron is a meal company, so they deliver to you all the ingredients you need to make the meal, all the instructions, little tips for how to make it better, add-ins, which they call knickknacks. So this piece from McSweeney's is entitled, Please Forgive Us at Blue Apron for This Week's Meals. We've been having a tough time lately. This box contains the ingredients and recipes for this week's Blue Apron meals. We know that you've come to expect a high standard of quality from Blue Apron, and normally we are happy to provide you with the best quality recipes and ingredients possible, but look, stuff has been rough for everyone lately, and we're doing our best. Things kind of got away from us this week. Recipe number one, scrambled eggs. Prep time, 45 seconds. Cook time, 1 minute. Serves two. This is four eggs. We were going to do a whole souffle thing, but then we had a bunch of stressful meetings, and then someone turned on CNN in the office kitchen, and everyone got kind of depressed. We all kind of wanted to go home early, sit down on the couch with a glass of wine, and watch a few Great British Bake-Offs before going to bed. So honestly, this could also be fried eggs if you wanted. Ingredients, four eggs. Knickknacks. You probably have some kind of cheese somewhere, right? You could throw that in. Prepare the ingredients. Crack the eggs into a bowl. Use a fork or a whisk We didn't test it. Someone really yelled at Claire in customer service over the phone because we forgot the watermelon radish in last week's bibimbap recipe, and it happened right after she read an article about cuts to Planned Parenthood, and she was feeling pretty down, so we took her out to lunch instead. Using a nonstick pan, if you have one, and some butter or oil, just kind of pour the eggs in there. Swish them around a little bit. You'll know when they're done because they won't be liquid anymore. What else do you want us to say? It's eggs. We were going to research the best technique, but we decided to spend the afternoon calling our senators and asking them not to support a ban on Muslims instead. Plate the dish. Put the eggs on a plate, a clean one if you have it. Recipe number two, rolled up deli turkey with various fridge condiments. Prep time, 30 seconds, cook time, none. Serves two. We're sorry, really, this is just a piece of deli turkey. At this point, checking Twitter for the latest news is basically a full-time job. So we're all feeling pretty burnt out. We all just wanted to catch up on the new Pod Save America and just chill for a little while. We took a long walk, and Damien from User Experience pointed out this really beautiful tree outside the office that had just begun to blossom, and then wondered out loud if all the trees in our neighborhood will die if Trump does away with the clean power plant. The turkey is organic and nitrate-free. Ingredients. 4 pieces of deli turkey. Knickknacks. You have condiments, right? Mustard, mayo, an old jar of olives you've been saving because you're pretty sure olives don't go bad, but not 100% sure. Use those. Prepare the ingredients. Simply roll up the turkey and stare into the fridge while you try to decide what condiment you're going to squirt on it. And also contemplate what will happen if you and your loved ones lose their health coverage. It's fine, just put ketchup on it. No one will see you. Plate the dish. If you haven't already eaten this while you were standing in front of the fridge, go ahead and eat it sitting down while watching the new season of Orange is the New Black. Don't turn on the news. Just stop and give it a break for like 30 minutes. Recipe number three, some cereal. Prep time, 20 seconds, cook time, none, serves two. Sometimes we think we've got this whole cooking thing down, and then sometimes we're like, why do we even bother? We're the worst at this, and everything is a total mess. We're gonna go to our parents' house for the weekend and catch up on some sleep. We were going to think of something better from cereal, but then Sarah from finance mentioned that she read somewhere that there are roughly 32,000 gun deaths per year in the United States, and yet the government isn't doing anything to make it harder to obtain firearms, and then we just didn't feel up to it. Ingredients, Cheerios, maybe. You might have gotten Honey Bunches of Oats. We ran out of Cheerios. Knickknacks. Just eat it dry, okay? Prepare the ingredients. Open the cereal bag. Plate the dish. Pour the cereal into a bowl or a mug, or reach in there and just pick out pieces of it while you scan through Twitter, composing a tweet about something, and then delete it because honestly, what's the point? Go to bed at 9 p.m. Wake up at 12 a.m. in a cold sweat, remembering that Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement and the polar ice caps may melt, leaving much of the U.S. underwater, eat a few more handfuls of cereal. Just shove it directly in your mouth. You can see why I like to keep that one for myself. And it's funny, but it's also true, right? It hasn't gotten less true in the last 2 years. The world is pretty overwhelming these days. There's a lot that we are excruciatingly aware of that we worry about, that we wish to make different? And what are we to do as religious people in these times? Well, the Unitarian minister, A. Powell Davies, who served All Souls Church in Washington, D.C., once said, "Life is just a chance to grow a soul." And it sounds so nice when you say it like that. Oh, all right. What we should do in these times is we should grow our souls. Probably eating rolled up turkey with deli condiments is not the best coping mechanism that we might adopt. But what on earth does it mean to grow a soul? And what is a soul anyway? So I want to read you a little quote from the book Rilla of Ingleside. Who here is familiar with the Anne of Green Gables books? Yeah. So these are written by a Canadian author. They're set in the late 19th and early 20th centuries on Prince Edward Island. And the last book in the series, Rilla of Ingleside, takes place on the Canadian home front during World War I. And I like to reread this book because it reminds me that other people have also lived in times where there was a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fear. And just opening up the newspaper in the morning or answering the telephone, you were afraid of what kind of news this might be bringing. And in this book, Rilla is the youngest of six children. One of her brothers has already enlisted and gone to Europe to fight. And then her second eldest brother enlists. And he is the brother she's closest to. And the book tells us, Rilla did not sleep that night. Perhaps no one in the family did. The body grows slowly and steadily, but the soul grows by leaps and bounds. It may come to its full stature in only an hour. From that night, Rilla's soul was the soul of a woman in its capacity for suffering, for strength, and for endurance. So perhaps the soul is the part of us that knows something about how to endure in difficult times. And I would say that for us as Unitarian Universalists, with our practice of joys and sorrows, with our practice of trying to look at the world and know as much about it as we can, the soul is simply a name for that part of us which grows to hold all that is. All the beauty of the world and the joy of our lives, all the brokenness and the fear and the anxiety. The soul is what knows how to be present. Now, of course, we could spend many sermons exploring other answers, but let's hold on to that one for today. So the soul is what holds all that is. And when we hold all that is, and we hold the vision of what the world could be, that is also the other piece of soul work. To be able to see the world that we dream of, which has never yet existed, but which we have conviction is possible, and so we work to make it so. Now, sometimes the all that is that we have to hold involves change that's not what we are aiming for. Sometimes it is like the story of the glass, which is beautiful, and which we know will someday change into a broken glass. Sometimes it's other kind of changes which may be difficult for us. We may be moving an elderly parent into our home. We may be changing jobs. It may be joyous but challenging change, like adding a child to our lives. And change is hard for humans. So a second reading, my favorite reflection on change, which comes from the Santa Rosa, California Press Democrat, February 15th, 1951. Dear sir, I see where the Big Dipper is breaking up and will be an entirely different shape in about 50,000 years. Is there nothing we can depend on? Signed, Disgusted. No, there isn't disgusted if you come right down to it. You must try to realize that nothing stays put forever and act accordingly. It is true that the five central stars of the Big Dipper are rushing toward the sun at 8 or 10 miles a second, and eventually the Big Dipper will look like something else. This will be tough on people whose only interest in life is something the shape of a dipper. But there is a brighter side to this picture. The real name of the Big Dipper is Ursa Major, or the Greater Bear. And my hope is that in 50,000 years, it will look a lot more like what it's supposed to be. Whatever happens, it couldn't look less like a bear than it does at present. Long, long ago, when Ursa Major was named, bears probably looked more like dippers than they do today. You can't depend on bears either. So this question, is there nothing we can depend on? If what we mean by depending on something is that it will never change, then that's pretty unachievable. Change is a part of life. We can grow to meet and integrate it and to influence it in good directions as much as we can, but we can't stop it. Things keep changing. And sometimes working for that change feels almost impossibly hard. Not just the sort of, oh, I don't like this change, the stars are moving, but the kind of change we are making when we are trying to build the world that we dream is possible. Do you know the story of how Carolyn McDade came to write the hymn Spirit of Life, which we just shared? Carolyn McDade did a lot of activist work, and she tells the story this way about writing Spirit of Life. During a time of intense social justice activism, I drove a friend home from yet another meeting. As I stopped to let her out, I confided to her how dry I felt, like cardboard that had spent years in an attic, the slightest motion of air, and I might disintegrate into dust. Even now, I remember the despair that image conveys. Finally, when I got home, I moved to my piano, and in the dark I sat and played and sang, and in singing my heart was freed. There was no plan or expectation in that moment, only a deep and immediate plea by a despairing soul. My ardent desire was to stay faithful to the movements I loved, to the people of those movements, and to their tally of goodness toward a world healthy and just for all. Now, Spirit of Life has become a hymn that is such a source of sustenance and comfort for so many Unitarian Universalists that I will tell you this second story. Some time ago at a General Assembly, the national meeting of thousands of Unitarian Universalists, there was a medical emergency in one of the general sessions. So thousands of people in a giant hall in a convention center, and everything came to a halt while the paramedics came to help this person who was in crisis. And the folks in the hall, unprompted, began singing Spirit of Life together as a way to say, we are here in this moment. We hold all that is. We send our love. We send our hope. We comfort each other with the act of singing together, sharing our breath and knowing that we are not alone in this moment. I wonder if you would sing Spirit of Life with me again, as we did earlier. It is number 123 in your hymnal, if you need the words. Oh, thank you. I'm always prepared to do this a cappella, but it's lovely to have piano. So this act of singing together and of coming together for worship once a week is a piece of how we grow our souls in order to meet the world as it is and to sustain ourselves to build the world we dream of. Now, as Victoria mentioned, I have just come from SUSI, the Southeast UU Summer Institute, which is a beautiful week-long gathering of more than 1,000 Unitarian Universalists. And on the very first morning, the Reverend Dr. Kendall Gibbons was leading worship, and she said, "I have to say it. We know that the world is on fire. We know that people are in danger. We know that there is so much suffering. Is it self-indulgent of us to take a week to enjoy each other's company in the beautiful hills of North Carolina?" And then, thankfully, she said, "No, it is not." Which is good, because it was the very beginning of the week. And she said, "It's not, because our call as people of love and justice is not only to find what is broken in the world and do what we can to heal it. Our call is to build communities where we practice the world as we believe it should be. Communities of covenant, communities of care, communities of truth-seeking and honesty. Places where we live our values to the fullest extent that we can." So whether you are here on a Sunday morning or spending a week next summer at SUSI or traveling to the General Assembly, remember that when we gather in community as Unitarian Universalists, this act is part of our creative justice making. We are trying to create the world that our souls know is possible. May it be so.